Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 6, Episode 117. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and sitting in once again for my co-host David Todd is Alex Kozora. Alex, I would say happy Friday to you today, but in Pittsburgh, it's kind of a, as far as sports goes, it's a gloomy day.
Yeah, a little bit of a letdown. But man, Dave, I was seeing some of the shots, you know, on the local news and on Twitter of the crowd down there near Consul, and they had to set up the second big TV to watch. That was incredible. It's too bad that those fans couldn't celebrate last night.
Boy, what a throng of of people that was. There's no way you get me down that way. I wonder how many porta potties they had down there for that many.
Probably not enough, which is a problem.
Probably not enough, and unfortunately the Penguins lost, so that they'll go back to San Jose now for Game 6, and it's a shame, they couldn't win the Cup on home ice, but just as long as they do it, the worst thing that can happen now is you definitely don't want this thing to go to Game 7, and even though it would be in Pittsburgh there, go ahead and take care of business out west. Now, the Pirates, I think, lost as well, and that one wasn't even close, so quite a disappointing day there. The Steelers have now wrapped up 3 weeks of OTA practices. And I don't know about you, Alex, but I'm not sure we learned a whole hell of a lot.
Nope. And, that's what we said before I think OTA started, or during that first week, of how much we really could learn. And I think you learn a little bit more in some of the, the day after reports that some of the guys will write. But, during OTAs, it's pretty hush-hush in Pittsburgh. That's kind of the media policy, which, has become more commonplace around the league. The whole thing in Buffalo kind of started that conversation this year, but Pittsburgh's media policy has been basically that. So very, very close to the vest.
I can understand, from the play-by-play aspect and not tallying quarterbacks' attempt numbers and, that kind of thing, as you have seen done in the past. But, these guys should be able to report of who's running with what string, slot, yada, yada, left, right, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I don't think that upsets the competitive balance of things. And who knows, maybe these guys are allowed to report the stuff, and they're just choosing not to. But I'm betting that it's the former there. It's a shame.
You know what the crazy thing is? One of the most lax teams with reporting is the New England Patriots. I see those beat guys, tallying everything up, their drops and completions and targets and quarterback reps and all that. And so if Belichick is cool with it, doesn't think it matters, then how can the rest of the league,
Very, very true. I mean, Belichick certainly won't give you anything to use. I take that back. Sometimes they'll get him on a certain topic, mm-hmm. as long as it's not player performance, that kind of answer. I don't know about you, but I've seen, it's probably three or four times a year where Belichick will give a scheme or a, I don't know. Yeah, philosophy type answer, and the quote in the transcript will probably be from for the answer of that one question alone, 800 words.
Yeah, no, they just ask him stupid questions. You ask him an intelligent question, he's going to give you an intelligent answer.
Right, right. I mean, and look, he's not definitely not my favorite guy in the world, mm-hmm. by any stretch of imagination, because obviously he can be an ass during press conferences throughout the year. But I mean, there are times when he opens up on, like I said, he just gives fantastic answers to questions. And here's one thing: is the coaches were able to talk at the end of week three OTAs. So that's always something to look forward to. Todd Haley, I think, was the one kind of up first and talking about Sammy Coates. He kind of, you know, kind of praised Sammy Coates and the work that he's done this off season. In fact, he said he had a tremendous off season. And what else did he say? Turned it up a notch. It's kind of hard to read into those things as we sit here during football and shorts season, but it's obviously something that you know we're all glad to hear. Now the question becomes, what kind of role will Sammy Coates have in the offense?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, kind of going back and talking about the things that we've talked about recently about Marcus Wheaton and all, I would expect Sammy Coates to be kind of a rotational guy, at least initially to start off the season with Darius Heyward-Bey, more of a guy that's going to play on the outside in 11 personnel type packages. You know, I still think, though, it's going to lead to probably not as many snaps as people think out there, but I think kind of 400-500 type snaps. What do you think?
Yeah, I think as long as he doesn't fall on his face, you know, I responded to a reader question a couple weeks ago and someone said, what is a successful season for Sammy Coates? And part of my answer was, you know, to get the starting job, you know, basically right after the first month of the season, after the first 4 weeks. So I think people have to realize, you know, that Darius Heyward-Bey is still a guy that's going to be in this race and going to compete and going to get some playing time. He's the fastest guy on the team.
Absolutely. That's the thing that's understated, I think, about Darius Heyward-Bey. And they didn't let, you know, maybe we're going to talk about this later on about the 40 that these guys ran, but they purposely did not allow Darius Heyward-Bey to run in that race, but go ahead.
No, that's what I was going to say and lead into. He's like 28 years old and he's still the fastest guy on the team. He's in tremendous shape. He's got a great work ethic, the best blocker. He can create explosive plays just like Coates, maybe not to that caliber and does not have the ceiling, obviously. But, you know, he's got that speed to burn to be that vertical threat. He's a versatile guy, well-known, trusted. It's about trust, Dave. You know, can you go out there and make the plays we expect you to on a consistent basis? We know you have that with Darius Heyward-Bey, even if he's going to have the drop, but you understand he's going to run the correct route, make the correct read, be on the same page. But, you know, I think Coates will eventually overtake him. But it's been a great offseason for Sammy Coates. He's been talked up more than I think anybody else.
The thing with DHB is he's definitely going to know your offense, all effort, you know, type guy, has the speed. The thing that, you know, I don't think he's really ever been good at during his career. I mean, obviously he's had the drop issues, but, I think he's been a less than favorable kind of yak guy as well, too, yards after the catch. He's really a home run type of guy or nothing, kind of an all or nothing type guy. Not a guy that's going to probably give you the big catch over the middle in traffic, but more of a guy that's going to run that deep post or the inside out deep corner type of thing to get you a big play. So with that said, you know, I can see Sammy Coates being the more of the possession receiver of the two. But, you know, when you go back, I was looking at a post I did after Sammy Coates was drafted. This is a guy that can definitely stretch the field. And, you know, when you look back at his, of course, college is a lot different than the pros. But he averaged 21.4 yards per catch at Auburn. And 12 of his 13 receiving touchdowns at Auburn were 33 yards of longer. So this is a guy that, you know, should understand things better, should have a little bit better get off this year. And when you think that, you know, back to, you know, last year, Martavis Bryant registered 10 receptions that went for 20 yards or more, that's definitely somewhat of a goal for a guy like Sammy Coates.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing for me, though, was just consistency. We know he can produce some big plays. We know what he did at Auburn, like you pointed out. We know what his skill set is. We got some glimpses of that in the preseason. I think he had the big catch against, I want to say it was Green Bay, you know, and what he did against Denver, producing a couple splash plays. But you want to see consistency. You don't want to see the drops. You don't want to see the guy running the wrong route. You know, his blocking assignments be sound, when to crack, when to stalk. If you do that, you'll get yourself on the field a lot quicker. If you struggle with that, again, it's going to be hard to trust you and you're going to be on the bench a lot more.
And while I don't think we'll see it a bunch, I think we'll see him in a slot occasionally because, you know, because of his size and because of, you know, I remember back to a couple of years, you know, when he was drafted, Richard Mann, you know, his famous phrase for guys that you know, wide receivers that are willing to block is he's willing to dig a safety out.
Right.
You know, and that's, I think, the kind of guy that Coates is. But I would expect primarily to see Coates, you know, on the outside. But regardless, you know, we didn't get to see the practices, and coach speak is coach speak, but it's definitely good to hear, you know, progress he's made.
Yeah, good news is better than bad news, which would be my Captain Obvious statement of the podcast.
And he talked a little, Todd Haley talked a little bit more about D'Angelo Williams and how he may or may not be used this year. You want to kind of recap that?
Who was that? I didn't catch a name.
Todd Haley talking about D'Angelo Williams.
Oh, yeah. You know, he was just saying that they might get him more involved in the offense this year, now that he's kind of a known commodity. They've seen a body of work with him in Pittsburgh, and that, you know, he could be used. He didn't, you know, explain any kind of role at all of how it could be used, but, you know, just said that he could be, you know, used in the offense, I guess, you know, taking a little bit of reps away from Le'Veon Bell, though Haley did acknowledge that, you know, it's hard to get Bell off the field. It's hard to justify that, so that's something to look for in the offense this year.
You know, it would be nice to see a little less wear and tear on Bell for obvious reasons. I mean, you don't want a guy having to run the football more than 250 times. To me, 250 is that number where you start wondering if you're going to wear the guy down, especially getting into the playoffs there. Now, you know, touches in the open field, I think, are obviously a little less detrimental, I guess would be the right word. But I mean, both of these guys can catch the ball out of the backfield. Both of them can run between the tackles. But on the flip side, it's going to be hard to force yourself to take a guy like Le'Veon Bell off the field.
Yeah, Bell's played about 90% of the snaps all last year, or all 2014, and whenever he was in the lineup for the five and change he played this year. Yeah, it's just really tough to do. But Williams gives you that complete skill set. You know, he can pass protect, be a receiver. So that's, you know, a good sign for how he can get involved in this offense, because he can do it all. He's not going to tip your hand as an offense. You're not going to lose anything in terms of that completeness. Bell's still going to be, I think, clearly the guy. But, you know, you know what you have in D'Angelo Williams, which gives yourself just so much comfort, Dave. I mean, the last, man, how many years has it been since you really felt good about a backup running back the Steelers have had? I mean, I really can't think of one off the top of my head right now. So to have that comfort for really the first time in a while is nice to have.
Yeah, people will probably try to say, well, you had Jonathan Dwyer and Isaac Redd, but Isaac
I
Redmond,
said confident.
I mean, neither one of those guys, you know, those were guys that are 2-3 yards in a cloud of dust type guys. They never really gave you, they weren't all purpose kind of backs.
Who was the last one? I mean, not even counting last year with D'Angelo, the couple weeks he was the backup to Bell, but who was before? I mean, Mwelde
Moore.
that was creepy. We did the same time. I don't know. I mean, because, you know, I mean, Redmond was okay, but, you know, he was not going to be a bell cow. Dwyer was a mess. I think it was Mwelde Moore.
Yeah, Mimo, as I always like to call him. The thing is, you know, what would he get a game? Like 8 snaps, maybe?
Yeah, but you knew if you had to put him in there. But, I mean, he was not going to be a, you know, super productive runner. It was really more about the, you know, ability to block and catch that gave you some comfort with him. So to have D'Angelo Williams, who can, of course, we've seen can be an extremely successful runner, that's just, you know, that's rare across the board to get a backup running back like that, because, you know, usually those guys are out of town. They're trying to get a starting job somewhere else. They're in a committee somewhere else. So just to have that in general is rare. And in Pittsburgh, I mean, it's really rare.
And when you look, you know, hopefully we don't have to find this out, except maybe late in the fourth quarters of a few games this year. Fitzgerald Toussaint. Mm-hmm. I mean, he for what he is, you know, in his limited action last year, obviously in the Week 17 game against Cleveland, and then in the two playoff games, outside of obviously the fumble against the Broncos, he really impressed. Mm-hmm. And the thing with him is, and Todd Haley talked about him this past week as well, too, saying, you know, how that fumble doesn't need to define him, and yada, yada. I think if this guy is able to stick this year as the number three running back, and you know, assuming that he's able to give you a little something on special teams, and that's really something that we don't know about him right now, but, you know, stays healthy and you know, gets himself, you know, 15, 20 carries throughout the season, this is a guy that could potentially be your number two in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I mean, I think Haley pointed out, and we've talked about it before, about how well Toussaint played against the Bengals in the wild card game. And without him, you might not, you know, win that game. That was such a difficult situation. So, yeah, I think if he's going to be your number three, you're going to be really happy with that. You know, it's hard to have amazing depth three deep at running back, you know, and I think Toussaint's going to be, you know, just about as good as it's going to get, assuming he still does well in the preseason.
And I think Matthew Marksey did a good post late last year about you know, his run blocking, and of course we had some gifs up with that as well too. And I've always talked about how, man, there's so many running backs not in football that could probably run between the tackles in the NFL if given a serious opportunity. But it's what these guys do when the football is not in their hands that's so terribly important. And it's one of those things, too, with Jonathan Dwyer, or, you know, who we just talked about early on in his career. Man, you say, this guy's not going to get it. And then all of a sudden, the light comes on and the want-to comes on with him. And he actually, you know, before his career ended, he actually became a pretty good pass protector.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you don't see that a lot. Usually these guys are what they are when they come out of college. But I think in the case of a guy like Dwyer, is he was never asked, you know, when you go back and look at that triple option, three-headed kind of monster that they had at Georgia Tech in college. It's just something he wasn't asked to do. And sometimes that makes the evaluation process hard with guys coming out of different offenses like that, spread offenses, guys that you know, running backs that you just don't really get to see do a lot without the football in their hands. But, you know, I thought Toussaint showed well in that area. And, of course, here we are, you know, we're talking about a third-string guy. But, look, we're, you know, one injury, one sprained ankle away from Toussaint being a guy that could get a helmet and not only that, get some touches on Sunday.
Yeah, and he gives you a little bit on special teams as well. He ran down some kicks last year, and he probably, even when they're all healthy, I mean, he should be active as a number three guy. So, yeah, I take great comfort in the Steelers' depth chart at running back. They've done a nice job of, you know, they've done a nice job of finding some of these backs to bring in, to sign D'Angelo Williams, to bring in Toussaint, even Jordan Todman, who you did a little bit last year, of course, now I think is in Indianapolis.
I never understood why he, you know, I like Todman. I never understand, too, why they didn't at least give him a chance to return a kick or two. Right?
That's going
to
be on his tombstone. Jordan Todman, why didn't the Steelers let him return kicks? That's how you're going to remember him. That's how I'm going to remember him because of how much you've talked about it. I don't know, Dave, the exact reason why, but I give credit to Brandon Hunt, who helps find some of these, you know, guys in the free agency and on the street, you know, during the season. He's brought in some real talent at running back, so hats off to him.
The thing about Tommy, he must not get the X's and O's either, or must not practice well and turns the stomachs of some of the coaches.
Well, it just might be a comfort thing where he was trying to learn how to play running back in Pittsburgh, and they didn't want to put extra on his plate, and they were comfortable with what Wheaton was capable of doing. And it's really about trust, and when you have a young guy like Todman in who's trying to learn the system just on offense, to put an extra thing on his plate can be a bit daunting. So, you know, it's all about possession of the football and making good decisions in the return game, punts, kicks. And I think when you had that with Wheaton, you had a lot more comfort and you didn't want to try to roll the dice.
The thing is, too, I think the few carries and the limited work that Todman did get, I think he showed enough that that's what enabled him to at least go latch on with the Colts there and get another run at a 53-man roster. But I guess what we're trying to say here is such a deep you know, the Steelers are really deep at the running back position for sure, and hopefully all these guys can stay
and
healthy.
And they even have a real quick. They even have a guy like Darrell Richardson still, you know, on a futures deal, who was a draft pick, spent some time in St. Louis. So you have another Sunday, you know, running back on this roster who's going to be able to help create that competition. So that's exciting to watch as well.
Anything else that any of the offensive coaches had, you know, talked about? I don't think we got a lot of quotes out of Mike Munchak.
Yeah, and Richard Mann still isn't there. I saw you did an article. Someone had reported that he had a minor medical thing, so he hasn't been around for OTAs.
Well, he's evidently been in the meeting rooms and off the field. He's just not out there on the field. Was the way that I kind of took it with him. But. What a great job he's done. What an underrated position coach he is.
I think, and I'm going to sound like a real homer here for 2 seconds, Dave, but I think across the board the Steelers have the best position coaches in the NFL. And, of course, I don't have the in-depth knowledge of every other team, so I'm kind of saying this a little blind here. But I think they're just a tremendous group. It's a group that's had a lot of continuity, a lot of tenure. You think of John Mitchell. You think of James Daniel. You know, you think of, you know, obviously what Todd Haley's been here for, what, how many years now? 4 or 5 years?
This is fifth year, right?
Yeah, I mean, the time goes by fast. You know, Keith Butler's been on staff forever and a day. I mean, you can go on and on through the list of guys. Mike Munchak's resume is what it is. So I think they have a tremendous coaching staff, and I think that's what really helps separate them from other teams.
Well, most definitely, you would get my vote offensively. You know, James Saxon, you know, a guy, Daniel. You could go on and on offensively. Defensively, outside of John Mitchell, and maybe, you know, of course, Keith Butler. I've yet to be impressed by Joey Porter, you know, with the products that he's put out there. Now he might be handicapped with the lumps of clay that he has to work with, that in Carnell Lake as well. You know, I still have my doubts that these guys are going to be long-term guys.
Yeah, obviously, I think defense is a lot more shaky than offense. But, you know, I think you got to give Porter, Olsovsky more time to see exactly what they can do. Yeah, Lake, it's really tough to evaluate some of these guys. But, you know, I've said it before. I think Lake does a nice job of teaching the technique. I think these guys do not get flagged very often. I think they play with good technique. I think they play with good position. They play with intensity. They play with physicality. Part of that's because of the player themselves and their drafting. But I think some credit has to go to Lake as well. And I guess, I mean, obviously you want to look at production, and you can put that on Lake. But I'm just trying to think about, you know, where does Cornell Lake need to improve? And I struggle to come up with an answer. But part of that's because I don't know exactly what's in his head right now, and it's harder to judge. But I'm sure if I asked a lot of people, well, how can Cornell Lake improve, I don't think they'd have a great answer.
No, because we're not there.
Right.
We don't know what's being taught.
Right.
All we can judge is the finished, you know, what happens on Sunday. And is that fair to do? Probably not. But
I mean, it's,
you know,
part of it. But I understand. I'm not saying that I'm trying to say that to say that he's great. I'm not trying to defend and carry water for Cornell Lake. I'm just saying it's hard for me to really rag on a guy if I don't have a great answer for how he can get better. I think the big thing people will point out to is just the yards, you know, the pass yards. The Steelers were 30th last year, so people
– And that's too easy.
Yeah, and people will skew that and say the Steelers were 30th in pass defense last year, which is not – yards and defense – does not necessarily mean the same thing. In terms of yards per attempt, they were, I think, 17th or 15th, you know, right there middle of the pack. They created turnovers. They were 11th overall as a defense in points per game. The red zone defense was excellent, I think, overall. So you have to look at a lot of other factors than sticking to just one very arbitrary number, especially yards per game in the NFL today. Teams are going to move the football. I mean, that's just the given. Teams are too high-powered. There's too much time that goes into the scheming and the game planning to stop a team entirely and they just, you know, pitch shutouts the way that the dynasty, the Steelers of the 70s, the 76 Steelers to do. It's about points, and, you know, the Steelers have done a nice job of limiting that.
And the thing, I hate to go back to some of the age-old principles of Dick LeBeau, but, I mean, in today's NFL, with the way they sling the ball around, you have to tackle the catch, you know, absolutely. You have to be able to, in my opinion, be able to, the way the Steelers play sometimes with these, you know, with these corners off, they got to be able to come up and play the run effectively, understand their angles, understand how to force guys back inside to help and that kind of thing. And then, you know, don't get beat deep. And you know, we've seen that. Sometimes too many times.
And just to expand on this topic for a second here, Dave, since we don't have a ton of news, I mean, was last year really that bad of a year for Steelers secondary and Carnell Lake? I mean, Lake got dealt with Antoine Blake, who was playing with one arm, Brandon Boykin, who, if we believe Lake, has a chronic hip issue. Mike Mitchell was dealing with his hand and his shoulder, especially towards the last quarter of the season. Ross Cockrell was new to the scheme. You know, that's not an easy task to deal with all the obstacles to overcome. And I don't think the secondary was terrible by any means. And they were forced turnovers and they got some stops in the red zone. Is it really that bad of a year?
Well, I always like to say that, you know, the secondary always goes hand in hand with pass rush and pressure.
Yeah, but you can still judge a secondary on their own merit.
Sure. And of course, he wasn't making the calls either of mm-hmm. whether or not they're playing man or that kind of thing too. So I mean, for what he had, I guess that's what you're asking. But the age old say you can't make chicken salad out of
something other than chicken salad.
You can't make chicken salad out of chicken. Yeah. You know what? But. You could go around every team in the league, though, right? And
I'm sure.
And say, well, this guy was banged up, and this guy.
The circumstances were not great. I mean, you can't say anything other. You have to agree with that statement. The circumstances were not great for the Steelers secondary last year. I mean, that has to be true, right?
Right. I will give you that.
Yes. Our team was a great year, but for what they had to work with, I don't think it was. I don't think it was terrible.
I mean, let's face it. Cortez Allen would have started every game every game of the first half of the season, at least probably had that knee been okay. So you lose a starting cornerback right mm-hmm. out of the gate week one. Week two, you have a guy like Ross Cockrell who, even though I know they were glad to get him off waivers, following mm-hmm. his release from Buffalo, was a guy that, you know, you had to think they didn't envision him coming in right away and playing a lot of snaps.
Right.
Lord knows what they were thinking with Brandon Boykin
mm-hmm.
when they acquired him. If the initial thought was, okay, this guy is going to be our nickel guy, and maybe he just didn't, you know, believe what you want to believe about him. Obviously, he didn't make an immediate impact. Antoine Blake, I mean, I know you're a bigger fan of Antoine Blake than I am, but he is what he is regardless.
Well, I recognize he was extremely crippled last year. I mean, the guy was playing with one arm out there. I mean, how can you play a corner with one good arm?
William Gay is a guy, I mean, no disrespect to him. He's been the best corner on the team for the last two seasons, but he's still not going to be mentioned in the same sentence as anybody that's considered for the Pro Bowl kind of thing, mm-hmm. you know, in fact, probably still best suited to be a slot nickel type guy, you know, especially at this point of in his career, gets away by with his smartness and his knowledge of X and O's.
He's still got some speed though. He ran step for step with Travis Benjamin last year. He's still got a little juice.
Yeah. But I mean, let's face it, this guy,
no, I know.
The work that he puts in, during the week, you know, really, really shows on Sunday.
Yeah, his film study is honestly incredible, Dave. I mean, basically, if you look at the last two seasons, the interceptions he's created, you can basically all point to that, to film study, to understanding route concepts.
Yeah, absolutely. And who else are we left with?
Well, yeah, we're talking about Mitchell. I mean, you know, I really like Mike Mitchell, but, you know, again, he got hurt last quarter of the year. You know, you had Will Allen, and I bet you if Lake had his choice, he would have started Robert Golden. Because I went back and I watched Robert Golden's time when Will Allen got hurt originally against San Diego. Man, Dave, I could not find many issues with Robert Golden. He played some great football there.
And we expect him to be the starter out of the chute opposite Mitchell this year. And the question then becomes, how quickly can Sean Davis get on the field, either you know, as the other safety or as a, you know, an extra defensive back in a dime type package or big nickel, if you will.
Did you see the comments Lake made yesterday about Davis? About the using him in some nickel package?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, and I think they and I think they have some you know, I think there were quite a few Twitter reports about him actually lining up there at least in the later part of this week's practice. So, and look, this is obviously something he's done. I mean, even go back and I broke down the Iowa game from last year. He has. There are some times that it'll turn your stomach, but he does have experience playing in the slot. I think, and I think we've already kind of talked about this, I'd much rather see it be against bigger tight ends than I would slot receivers.
Yeah, no, I would too, but you never know what you're going to get when teams line up. So, you know, I think Davis is capable of doing both. And, you know, I think, if Golson just can't get healthy and he just can't get out there, and if Artie Burns' development's slow, you know, maybe the Steelers do kind of go to that big nickel where they tried to do that with Shamarco Thomas's rookie year. I'm sure you remember that. We talked about it a couple weeks ago. And they get Davis in there as that third guy who can be that, you know, physical presence inside as well and keep your run defense strong. So something I'm definitely going to watch for. I think it's an interesting thought. And if kind of the stars, I guess you could say a line, but I guess it would be things going wrong. You know, Davis could get a role there.
Yeah, I think, and I think regardless, you know, I think, you know, ultimatum, the directive has been put out there that they need to get both these guys probably on the field sooner rather than later, talking about Artie Burns and Sean Davis. But with that said, you're not going to put them out there if they don't know what they're doing.
Right.
And I take Davis as probably the more savvy of the two when it comes to football knowledge. And it's probably not surprising, being as how really Artie Burns is going to go through a transition, I think, that a lot of people aren't going to like, because the sheer fact that not only did he not play a lot, you know, have a lot of starting experience at Miami, he missed a lot of off-season stuff too because of him running track. So, you know, it's probably good that you got a fifth-year option with this guy, because I think there's going to be some bumps and bruises along the way during his rookie. You know, Kevin Colbert says, you know, we always treat it as their senior year when he gets these underclassmen. I think he's going to see playing time. I'm just not convinced how good that playing time might be.
Yeah, you're going to have to build or break Artie Burns down to build him back up, I think, in the early going.
You might just have to throw him out there and just, hey, this is your guy, play some bump and run, and just, you know, when you do get him on the field initially.
Yeah, again, you want to play to his strengths, but, you know, he's still got to learn everything. And even his strengths are going to be tested in the NFL. And although he has fantastic length, what is it, 33 and a quarter inch arms for a 6 foot frame, it's not really about length. It's about hand use and how your upper body and your lower body kind of work in tandem. So I think length is a little overrated and a little cliche across the board, because it's really about hand use and the technique that you play with that length. So, you know, I just don't know where his playing time is going to come from. I guess it could be a rotation with Ross Cockrell, or if Golson falls on his face and Gay kicks inside, and that's going to give, you know, obviously Burns a chance to get an outside spot. I don't see him making an impact right away.
And Ross Cockrell, from what we can tell on tape, is and look, I mean, coming out of Duke kind of probably helps as well, too. This is a guy that's got some pretty good football IQ.
Yeah, he's a smart guy. He's just got to, I mean, he's got to be more physical. And I think he had said to some reporter, again, I forget the name, but that he had put on weight and he bulked up a little bit, which he needs to do. He's got to be a more physical, intense player. I said this last time. Yeah, he's Bob Ross off the field painting away, but you can't be Bob Ross on the field. You know, so you got to be Danny Bateman from The Replacements, if anyone knows the reference. But he's got to be a more physical guy. Otherwise, he's going to have a lot of problems. And again, go ahead.
And let me tell you, Artie Burns might have some long arms, but he doesn't know how to use them against stock blockers.
Yeah, yeah, and that's hand use. So, I mean, when I talk about length, yeah, a guy has length, but one of my favorite comedians, I think I have to censor myself a little bit here, but, you know, he made the joke of he has a friend that can speak in seven languages and people think he's smart, and the comedian said, no, that just says means you say more dumb stuff and more people can understand you. So you might have a trait, but if you can't use it effectively, if you have length, but if you don't have hand use and you don't have, you know, the ability to have your lower body work with your upper half, it doesn't really matter that you have that kind of base trait or physical trait. So the hand use is going to be the biggest thing for him.
Let me ask you this. Of all the guys in this secondary, and you know that we expect to make the final 53, which one are you most concerned about?
Spin that back to me one more time. The guy I'm most concerned about is going to make the 53 in the secondary.
Yeah, what player are you most concerned about? You know, of all the guys that should make the 53 this year, secondary.
I mean, I want to get Golson on the field, and right now he hasn't been. And if he doesn't, then you're kind of, you know, you might be more limited as a defense. Your depth, of course, is going to be tested even more. And I've talked about how I'm worried about the depth in general on defense, but especially in the secondary, how the youth, you know, the Ross Garkle is the second most tenured cornerback right now in Pittsburgh. Behind him, you know, with Golson, Burns, Duran Grant, they have one career snap between them all. And so you're going to, if you put Burns out there, you get Grant maybe to a bigger role. If you have to keep Gay inside because you don't have another slot option, you know, it's a domino effect, I think, to it. And it's going to, you know, it might go okay, but there's going to be some growing pains for sure with that kind of youth. And again, if you're a little bit more limited on defense and where guys can play and what they could do. Golson's got to get out there. I mean, if he doesn't do anything this year, that's 2 years of little to nothing. And that's, of course, big cause for concern.
Yeah, I was going to say Golson as well, too. Do we know if he was able to get back on the field at the end of this week or not?
No, the last thing I saw, they did some running on the side in one practice. That was the last update that I had read.
And was it Keith Butler, I think, that said on Thursday, I don't know, something along the lines of, I don't know what Golson can do. I haven't seen him. Boy, if this guy wipes out.
Yeah, I'm not trying to say that he is. I'm just saying.
No.
But I don't want people to take it that way, but he's got to get on the field. He needs these reps, Dave. He's barely ever gotten reps in the NFL.
Absolutely, and look, neither one of us are predicting he's going to wipe out, but it would be nice to start. I mean, outside of OTA practices, that's all he's done.
Yeah, I mean, in the mental reps,
he hadn't done a lot of that this year,
right? And the mental reps are great, but you need the physical reps. I mean, everyone looks great and has a great play until you get punched in the mouth. Golson's got to get punched in the mouth a couple times, deal with that, become better for it, have some tape to learn from and go off of. Everything's theoretical right now. It's like being a great painter until you have to paint, and then everything's garbage. Golson's really got to get those reps. Hopefully he can be out there for the minicamp, which I believe is actually the 14th through the 16th, so it's this upcoming week.
Here's the thing, is during the preseason, man, we should be treated to a lot of Golson, Burns, Grant,
mm-hmm.
Shamarco,
Sean Davis. Yeah,
in my opinion, I know you have to have a you know 90 man roster and carry a lot of these guys that are going to be out on the street looking for work fairly quick, but I would save those guys for the final two possessions. Last possession of a preseason game, and I would get as many snaps to those guys that I just rattled off as I possibly could. I want us to be talking about, man, let's see, 40 times 4. I want to be talking about those guys playing 150 snaps you know, during the preseason.
Yeah, the more the merrier. And man, I wish this was the year the Steelers had 5 games and 18 practices, because
I agree. I couldn't agree more with you. I would eat it up.
Yeah,
this.
But just to get those guys reps. But yeah, I mean, I wish every year the Steelers. You and I are the only two guys that want to expand the preseason. Everyone else is like, cut it down. I want to go back to the 7 preseason games. I want like a 2-month training camp. I want to give those guys all the reps possible. I mean, I have a very soft spot for any fringe roster players.
Yeah, it's hard for us to get concussions in these chairs in mom's basement.
we're very safe far away. But man, I mean, it's got to be the worst to be a guy that's trying to fight for his roster life. I mean, you get paid nothing, you get no reps in the off season because of the way the CBA is outlined, and in the preseason because everyone wants to cut that back and get rid of those games. They want to just chew you up and spit you out, and man, that's awful.
Well, the thing is there's only so many. I mean, look, we could go through this whole roster right now. We could whittle it down to there probably only being 12 spots open.
No, I mean, I understand that, but I want to just give these guys the opportunity.
Sure. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is there's just so much limited opportunity. I mean, mm-hmm. even in the preseason, you got to get you know that X amount of players are automatically going to be on the roster.
Mm.
A couple of your fringe guys, you probably got a good idea before you even hit training camp that they're going to probably make your roster. And then, even the guys that get in there and maybe get an interception or two during the preseason, they have no shot. Mm-hmm. And people, that's why I laugh all year long or come final cutdown time too, when people get so upset saying you can't cut this guy, he's not going to clear waivers. You've got teams around the league and unless a guy is an extremely good special teams player, there's not much reason to go out there and claim a guy off of waivers after initial cuts, because he's already going to be behind the eight ball on a new team. The odds of him coming in and contributing are slim to none. I mean, Ross Cockrell was an exception to the rule, but I mean he obviously wasn't a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, I think you can go back to a guy like Antoine Blake when Jacksonville cut him. He wasn't a rookie either, but because he was such a good special teams guy at that stage of his career, that allowed him to get picked up. It just we see it year in, year out. There's just not many guys claimed off waivers, regardless, around the league after these final cuts. Now, of course, once you get into the season, it's a little bit different story here, injuries and everything that goes with that. But some of these guys just aren't going to be given the opportunity, and that's kind of what you're saying.
Exactly. That's the part that kind of grinds my gears a little bit, is that there's no shot, and they should be given an opportunity because they've worked this hard and they've come this far. And you're right. The team saying, okay, we have to give the second guys their reps, the second team guys, their chance because they're going to be on the team. They need to make sure they're ready to go. The starters have to get there a little bit of time as well. There's just not enough reps to go around. They keep whittling that down more and more. I mean, what's the point of having a 90-man roster if guys 80 through 90 are not getting any opportunity at all? It's a little funky. I would like to see change in the opposite direction, but I know I'm in the very, very, very extreme minority on that one.
I'm gonna go. I'm gonna point to the fence here. All right,
go for it.
The Steelers are gonna go undefeated during the preseason.
Oh. Well, last time that happened, the preseason's not been kind to the Steelers win loss wise.
Hey, that's a prediction you want to talk about a meaningless prediction for meaningless games. But to be quite honest with you, I do look forward to seeing a lot of that secondary young players in the secondary that we just talked about, those 4 or 5, get a lot of snaps.
Yep.
And I think that'll be beneficial. One of those guys in the secondary, Carnell Lake, talked about on Thursday or Wednesday or Thursday, was Shamarco Thomas.
Yeah, it was, Dave. And Lake said that he had saw some improvement in Shamarco Thomas, talked about, above the neck, which is the big bugaboo, which you've mentioned 100,000 times with Shark. But Lake said, those things before. I think some readers, very astute readers in the comments section, have pointed out some of the past comments Lake has made talking him up. you know. But so we'll see. We know what the issue is with Shamarco Thomas. Don't have great ideas of how to fix it. You just hope that it does.
When you look at the pictures coming out of OTAs these last 3 weeks, he is rocked up. I mean, he looks the part of a strong of what you want your strong safety to look like, especially one that's going to play down in the box quite a bit. I mean, he's always, you know, coming out of Syracuse, he's always kind of looked that part. The thing is it just does not translate when he gets between the lines as far as him knowing his responsibilities, where to be on the field. He's got the athletic and physical ability. It's just something just is not clicking.
Yep, that's always been the issue. It's not much of a secret. If there's any, for those still on the bandwagon or in the fan club, I think Stark had a good day on, would that be yesterday, Thursday. I think he had, two interceptions, including a diving red zone interception, according to Jeremy Fowler. There's a couple of pictures on Steelers.com showing Stark picking off a couple passes. So if you want any sort of glimmer of hope, it is football in shorts, but it looks like he had a nice way to end the week.
I think Ross Cockrell's had about 6 or 7 of them as well, you know, as far as I can tell, during the OTA practices, which, you know, a lot of that I think has to do with 7 shots, right?
Yeah, I'm sure if you're including that, less physicality, corners have a better chance to be able to make some of those plays. But, yeah, it's still good to see, I guess.
Let's see. Joey Porter talked to the media. What I didn't hear him asked. You know, get asked specifically about a lot of different players, but he was asked about Jarvis Jones, and I think Keith Butler was as well too. They both liked the fact that he's got this extra pressure on him this year. Of course, the Steelers did not pick up his 5th-year option. That means Jarvis Jones is playing for his NFL livelihood and a big contract next offseason. Porter, even though this is kind of being framed as Porter kind of praising Jarvis Jones, in the development during the offseason so far, I think if you really listen to the comments that are out there and if you read the comments, I think it's being framed all wrong. I think it's more of a line that Joey Porter is saying, look, he understands what's mentally, you know, what's going on mentally with the game. As he should. I mean, I would be disappointed if anything other than that came out heading into his 4th season here. But he really kind of stopped short of really saying anything else and went as far as to say, look, this is basically flag football that we're playing right now. It's hard, you know, until these guys start getting on the ground and getting blown up one-on-one, really don't know, you know, where they are. So with that, it's not surprising that he didn't talk about a lot of players because, quite honestly, what is Joey Porter going to find out about his outside linebacker unit right now other than they know where to line up, they're moving quick type of things, right?
Yeah, I think Joey Porter was about as apathetic about this process as anybody on that coaching staff, or at least the way that he talked about it. Yeah, he just kind of said, you know, just flag football out there. It doesn't really, you know, matter. You don't really learn anything from it. So I don't think there's a whole lot to go off of. Yeah, Jarvis has a lot of pressure on him, but I think that was pretty clear, pretty well known that this is a big year for him, for his, you know, future in Pittsburgh, his NFL career, ability to make money. We'll see how that goes.
James Harrison still going to get more snaps than him?
Oh, man. He did last year, didn't he? How many snaps last year? I think
like 55, 45,
yeah,
somewhere around there.
Yeah, not a crazy margin. I'm going to say yes, just because I think Harrison's the guy you went out there late in the 4th quarter to try to close out a game. I think you have that better in James than you have with Jarvis. So I'll say yes, but it's going to be a pretty negligible difference, I think.
And when you think about a guy playing 500 snaps, and a guy like Jarvis Jones, he's probably going to be asked to drop, you know, some in coverage.
A lot in coverage.
And that's going to limit his pass rushing, total numbers, times that he's turned loose out after. Whenever there's a obvious get after a quarterback down, that's probably going to be James Harrison out there.
Well, they usually do it just off of rotation, series by series. But I think if you're looking late in the game where you need to stop, That kind of goes out the window, and then you're going to put James out there.
So, I mean, what are we looking for? Obviously, neither one of us are expecting double-digit sacks. What's a good season, you know, sack-wise for Jarvis now? Five?
That's honestly the number I had in my head, 100% serious. I mean, what's his career high? Two? Two and a half?
He's got five for his career, Alex.
Okay, yeah, so not yet.
He would equal his career high, I mean, his career number by getting five in a season.
Yeah.
Now, of course, obviously, the thing is, you just want to see him be able to get around the quarterback more. Not necessarily the sacks are nice, obviously. You just want to see him be able to get after the quarterback more, and that's just something that he hasn't been able to do on a consistent basis. And really, quite honestly, all of these outside linebackers, you could say the same thing about this unit right now.
Yeah, that's why Bud Dupree's got to take the big step, because he's the only guy that you could really have a reasonable expectation to make a jump like that. And I've been watching Dupree a little bit last night, trying to see where he needs to get better. I'm going to try to do some more of that today if the coach's film cooperates. Very frustrated by the NFL Game Pass right now. But yeah, I mean, Dupree's a guy that really might need to get, you know, 8-9 sacks this year. Hopefully double digits, but I'll put the floor at 8-9 to really get this pass rush to take another step.
Where does the percentage of snaps come out on that other side between Dupree and Moats?
I think
55-45?
I think it might be more than that, and Dupree's getting snaps because I think Moats was there. And I really like Arthur Moats. I mean, don't get me wrong. He's a great guy. There's not a lot of obvious flaws in this game. He plays with the run well, smart guy. He can drop into coverage the little bit that he's asked to. But 2 years ago, you know, when James Harrison came back late in the year, Moats didn't play. The last 2 weeks of the season, he saw five snaps or something like that on defense. So I think if Dupree continues to ascend, Moats is going to go back into that kind of reserve role. So I think it would be a 65-35 split, something like that, and it would grow as the season goes on.
So you think Dupree most definitely will play a third more snaps than Jarvis?
You're making me do math. A third more than Jarvis. I don't know exactly on the split between them. I don't really compare them too often since they're playing on different sides, but he's going to play a good bit more than Jarvis, sure.
Chickalo just needs to make team right now.
Yeah, I'm not focused about just all, you know, defensive snaps. I want to see special teams. Someone called Chickalo a special teams star yesterday with his.
I don't want to go that far.
No, it was so silly to call. It was 49, I think, snaps in special teams in the regular season, a little bit more in the playoffs. He's not a star in anything. He's a guy still just fighting to make a team. Yeah, he made the one impact play last year. I think the forced fumble went against Cleveland. But other than that, you know, nothing he's done can be considered a star. Now, I like Anthony Chickalo. I think he's gotten his weight down. I think he's embraced that process. You know, he did really well in camp last year. It was probably one of the bigger surprises to me. And, you know, he struggled to get active and get a helmet, but he did. And, he made the most of it that you can. But this is a guy still fighting for that spot and still has to be a guy that shows he's capable of replacing a Sean Spence, a Terrence Garvin, a Will Johnson. Those were all four-phase special teamers. Pittsburgh's lost a lot of those guys, so Chickalo's going to have to fill that role. That's where he starts.
One play does not make you a special teams demon.
Oh, yeah, a star, yeah. It was a very, very silly thing, I think, to say.
Let's see, what can we wrap up with? The Cincinnati Bengals signed Giovanni Bernard to a 3-year extension earlier this week. That thing supposedly totals out at about, in new money, $15.5 million over 3 years. So it's just over a little more than $5 million a year for him, for a guy that drafted before Le'Veon Bell, before Eddie Lacy. Because of what his perceived market value is, there's no doubt in my mind that Le'Veon Bell is going to ask and receive $8 million a season in new money average.
Yeah, I mean, you're better with the number stuff than I am, but I think regardless of what Bell gets, he's going to be the second highest paid back in the league, only behind Adrian Peterson.
Right, so that would mean somewhere along the line of 8.1, 8.2, right around in there.
I think it'll be a little bit more to be. I think it'll be closer to 9.5
of the new money average.
Yeah, I mean, that's just my guess. You're better again.
It could be. I just
Because you can't be that far under AP. I mean, you can't be that much lower.
I don't know. I mean, had he stayed healthy, I mean, he'd be pushing AP as far as that number goes. Yeah. But coming off the knee injury and all, look, he deserves to be the second. I mean, there's nothing wrong with being, you know, even if you're $2.5 million behind AP, you're still number two on the list. You know, and I think that's where he needs to be, between 8 and 9 million. So, you know, I've been wrong about saying this player. You know, I will be surprised if this player or that player doesn't get a deal. But I, quite honestly, I will be surprised if Le'Veon Bell does not get a deal by the start of the regular season. And I will be surprised if it's not between $8 and $9 million. Mm-hmm. I mean,
that's fair. Cool.
I think that is what it is. A couple of injured players. You know what? Here's the big news about OTAs. Mm-hmm. Is there was, as far as we can tell, no significant injuries to significant players. So I, you know, if you want to take anything away as good news or a big development, it's that. Yeah. And the Steelers did have to waive, you know, several players here at the end of OTAs. All three of these guys have reverted back to the injured reserve list, and I think you and I had tackled a couple questions from readers this week. They have 5 days, I think it is, to work out an injury settlement with these guys. Mm-hmm. So if they don't, you know, then these guys will probably stay on IR at a split salary, which is normally roughly around half of, you know, two-thirds to half of what they were scheduled to make as rookies until they get healthy. And you would have to think, barring knee injuries with any of these guys, they're probably soft. I say probably because I don't know for sure. Probably soft tissue, hamstring, that kind of thing that, you know, they would just sit on IR until they're fully healthy and then can be waived outright. But don't be surprised if all three of these guys work out an injury settlement in the coming days so that they can get themselves recovered and hopefully try to get themselves back in a camp somewhere else.
Pittsburgh might want to retain the rights of a guy like Tyreek McCord. They gave him a big signing bonus, and they might want to keep him around for a year and see if they can finally learn about him next year.
Yeah, that. I mean, we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? But Eli Ross.
And we don't even know what the injury is with him. I you know, have you heard?
No, I mean, it could be something major though that needs to keep him out for the entire year. They're not going to do a settlement, so yeah, maybe we can find out at some point. I don't know.
Yeah, and look, the thing is I can guarantee you that McCord had a split salary.
I'm sure.
I know for a fact he does. Actually, I've seen the contract. So, you know, if you think he does have, you know, potential upside, then yeah, you could keep him on IR all season and it not cost you, you know, a whole heck of a lot against the salary cap. Yeah. So, we'll be watching the waiver wire for that. Anything else stick out to you that we need to cover?
I just wanted to mention real quick here, I did a study yesterday talking about kind of the Steelers' field position offensively, defensively, and kind of their scoring correlation. And my big takeaway, I thought, for the Steelers' offense was, you know, just looking at the numbers for last year, as much as I want the best kick returner out there possible, I don't think it really matters, Dave. I just want to take a knee every time and get the ball to 25, because if you look at the data I have, there really isn't that much of an uptick going from, you know, the 20 to the 30 to the 25 to the 30. So just take the knee every time if you can, or at worst, just get out to the 20, and you're probably going to be okay.
That was a great study, by the way.
Thank you.
I enjoyed that, brief and to the point. What did you think about the numbers that Pat Kerwin threw out there as well, too, as about, you know, as far as blitzes and that kind of thing? That kind of matched your numbers, right?
Yeah, it wasn't too far off. Some slight differences in there, but our criteria was a little different. Yeah, it just, if you haven't seen it, go just type in Kerwin on the search bar on Steelers Depot. It'll probably be the first one that comes up. But basically, it just said the Steelers were one of the most blitz-heavy teams last year and one of the most successful at it. And that's a nice combination to have.
Absolutely. Okay, Alex, I guess until Monday, the next couple of weeks are going to be tough. And the mandatory mini camp, of course, is next. We're 7 weeks away from, I believe, from the start of training camp. That's all I got for right now. I want to give a special shout out, and I forgot to do this on Twitter earlier in the week. Matthew Marks, he has now been with me for 3 years as of, I think, June 1st. And You won't see Matthew very active on Twitter. I'm not even sure he listens to the podcast, to be quite honest with you. But Matthew has been, you know, a rock for Steelers Depot for quite a while. I think several of you wake up with Matthew every morning and have for 3 years, because his stuff is normally the first stuff that goes up on the site. Tremendous help, a very knowledgeable guy. So if you get a chance and you're listening to this podcast, hop on Twitter and you know, just congratulate Matthew. M Marczy, Marczyfor putting up with me for 3 years, because he's a big part of what we do at Steelers Depot, and I can't thank him enough. And I know you feel the same way about it, right, Alex?
Oh yeah, I mean, he's been every day he puts up 4 to 5 great articles. That's not easy to do, especially in these dog days of the off season. And he's a guy that never needs an editor or needs any sort of hand holding. I mean, he just does his thing for 3 years now. It's not many guys like him out there, for sure.
Yeah, I could use 2 or 3 more Matthew Marczy's.
most definitely. People. That's the first guy I'm going to and saying,
absolutely. Matthew, if you listen to this, I appreciate you. I love you, buddy. You do a great, great job. Let's see. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow Alex on Twitter at Alex_Kazor. You can follow my co-host David Todd at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Take donations all year round. You can do so by going to SteelersDepot.com and hitting that donate button in the navigational bar. Alex, appreciate your work today. We'll try to manufacture something to talk about on Monday and Friday of next week. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.